Welcome, everybody. This is BNP Weekly episode 124, which we were debating, but I guess it is. So we'll see. Or maybe we'll have double 124. So that would be pretty awkward. Anyway, it's 26th of... yes, AMB version of the same thing. Today is 26th of April, which is pretty wild. Spring is coming. Today is a really dark day in Helsinki, but it's spring is coming. Summer is winning, which is really good. At least this side
of the winter is coming, right? Again.
This side of the hemisphere. Yeah, the Christmas is pretty soon. What is it now? 8 months from now, it's a Boxing Day. So think about that. So anyway, in the BNP week, we'll talk about the latest.
31% of the year, just for a fact.
In the BNP week, we'll talk about the latest in Microsoft 365. And typically, we have a visitor. We cover some news and articles from the past week. My name is Esa Juvonen. I'm a program manager from the Microsoft 365 platform side of the house. And with me as a co-host is Waldek. Who are you?
Good day, everybody. My name is Waldek Mosdegas, reporting to you progress of the year from the Netherlands.
Yes. What was it? 33%?
31.
31. Okay.
31. Anyways, today with us is a guest from the US. Emily
sunny
Mancini.
Florida. Yes. I'm so
I don't
jealous.
Know if it's sunny. Is it? Is
yes,
it sunny?
Every single day.
It's always. Exactly. It's always.
Except, well, I mean, once in a while you have tornadoes and storms, right?
Yeah, but it's so
sure.
rare. Who counts? So,
yeah.
You know.
Hurricanes. Oh, yeah.
St. Petersburg, Florida is famous for having so much sun. They used to give away the newspaper for free if it ever wasn't sunny during that day. And I think they gave the newspaper away 3 times. So even if we have a hurricane, sun comes out anyway.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
It sounds like a great place to have solar panels.
Yeah, absolutely.
Before we go to actually, I'm curious on the how did you end up in Florida? Because that is a good story. Who are you, Emily? Do a quick intro as who you are, what do you actually do?
Sure. So I'm an architect at Synpraxis Consulting. I'm a Microsoft MVP and member of the Patterns and Practices team. I specialize in using Microsoft 365 out of the box with a focus on user experience, training, and adoption.
Cool. Excellent. And it's been great to work with you on the adaption side of the PMP, so the sharing is caring and all of this stuff, so helping people on learning how to contribute, which is, we'll get back on that one. Before we get there, I really want to get back on the discussion which we just had before we started recording, because I thought you lived in Boston as well, but then I was educated earlier today by, I think, April Dunham or somebody who said that, no, Emily actually lives in Florida. I'm like, what? What happened?
So I'm one of those statistics for people who moved during the pandemic. I lived up in Boston with my husband. We both worked at a biotech before I was at Synpraxis Consulting. And when the pandemic hit, he got to work remote like a lot of other people, and that became permanent. So we had the option to move anywhere we wanted. And I really hate snow. So my vote was to come on down to Florida. So we bought a house that we hadn't seen and then drove on down to Florida, showed up, and we've been here for the past year and a half. And I'm quite grateful that I got to escape past winter and hang out here while it was 60 degrees and lovely.
Wow. I'm jealous.
Yes. That's actually pretty cool.
You won't be jealous in the summer when it's so hot and humid and everyone hates it here.
Yeah,
so we're headed into the bad season.
Yes. I mean, but I mean, then you'll be able to move back again, right?
Yeah, maybe, right? Who knows?
Maybe you should actually have 2 houses. Hey, you never know. So you never know.
Right?
Mm-hmm. A cabin.
Yeah.
I do love Maine. Anyway.
But it's actually a pretty cool story, though. So, yeah. Looking outside in Helsinki right now, Florida looks, yeah.
And you're like, the winter is coming.
Well, it looks like that. It's just
you have, but I mean, you have in Finland like 2 days of summer, right?
Pretty much, yes.
And one
2 days of summer,
one of them. Yeah, exactly. And I mean, one of them is raining.
Yeah. Not really, actually. No, that's not really the case. But anyway, so...
2 of them. Okay.
Yes. Let's not talk about Finland. Let's talk about Emily. So, Emily, we kind of touched that briefly. You've been involved with the community engagement model and the sharing is caring and all of that stuff. Can you explain what that is all about? So,
Absolutely. So Sharing is Caring was born to try and provide hands-on training and reduce any barriers for people in the community being able to contribute. So not just contribute, whether it be GitHub and learning how to use GitHub, but also sometimes using what other people have available in the community. So some of those SPFX samples and how to actually add those into your environment.
Or list formatting samples or whatever. Not necessarily just SPFX, of course, but still.
Absolutely. And I work closely with Mark Anderson as well on the community docs. So sometimes contributing is writing. So someone who identifies themselves as a non-developer, which we'll debate a bit more about, I guess, that is something that I think a lot of people don't think about when they think about contributing, is that you can actually be sharing a lot of these use cases and business scenarios on community docs to really help people understand how to use Microsoft 365 better.
Yeah. And it's having those kind of initiatives as super, super important, so that the people who don't feel comfortable can go to a training. And these are actually instructor-led trainings where people help hands-on how to get started and what does the GitHub actually means to get started on contributing docs and consuming stuff as well, which is really, really cool. But Emily, you kind of mentioned what the non-development side of the story and is that, but you also said that you're an architect. So how do you identify yourself as a working person? So what do you actually do for a living?
So typically when we work with different organizations, it can be anything from implementation or just continuing to build on their environment. Most of the time when people come to me, they have Microsoft 365 and they don't really know how to use it better. So what I spend time doing is really understanding their outcome objectives of what do they want to happen with this technology? Because so often we just turn it on and think, okay, I have Teams and SharePoint now. We're all going to communicate better and it's going to be awesome. But there's a couple more steps than that to really figure it out. So are we trying to increase transparency and decision making? Is there information pollution and an overload of messaging across the organization? Are we really trying to reduce those focuses and maybe build in some audience targeting? How can we better support our end users get those top tasks done every day? So when I'm actually working with these organizations, I'll start from that discussion-based side, develop user stories, and then anything out of the box, I'll help stand up those sites. And so I spend majority of my life in SharePoint Online.
The interesting thing is, right, so for the things you mentioned, like it feels to me like a big part of it is the way people work and communicate, right? So it's sure it is still about tech at some point, but there's also feels like there's a huge chunk of change, right? Is that also something you see and do, or do you have others in your team who do that?
Absolutely. I think that that's one of the biggest parts that people forget about as well, right? That the technology is only going to help us solve the problem, but we really need to think about the people who are there and how do we support them as well. So as you know, I'm a huge advocate of Microsoft Learning Pathways, the ability to take Microsoft documentation, mix it with your own, embed it right there in sites, in context, remove that friction for people to be able to understand what they're doing and why. So figuring out that change management of the why and how we're increasing their productivity is where I like to spend most of my conversations.
Yeah. And so even when you start right? No. So how do you know like how far a company is and if they're ready for this or should they start first? Do you have a way about it? Like how can you determine their readiness in a way?
Good question. I think one of the first things we talk about is the company and department goals. So understanding what they're doing as an organization so that we could align the technology to support that. I've been working with Mark Anderson, Simon Doy, and Simon Hudson to update the SharePoint maturity model to be the Microsoft 365 maturity model. And that provides a really good framework to do that initial assessment of going through, right, reading what the impacts are, see where the organization is. Then you can also identify, hey, maybe we're at level 100. We're still sharing with OneDrive links. We don't really have centralized collaboration, but we know we want to be able to have these project management sites. We want them consistent across all our projects. Maybe that's a 300 level and we can all align on where we want to head.
Cool.
And that's something which is being built in the community docs as well as a community-driven initiative. So having a Microsoft 365 maturity model definition and a process which hopefully will be used more and more and will be contributed by people, because having a consistent way of identifying the maturity actually makes a lot of sense. So how have customers kind of approached that? Are they adapting that kind of a way of thinking? Are they pleased that there's some sort of a documentation available, or what's the feedback?
I think one of the first surprising things is that so many organizations are already doing it without the formalization of that conversation, and they don't realize it. So these IT teams are already thinking in that way and planning in that way, but the challenge is having a way to communicate with the rest of the business. So I'm a big advocate of you make change with the business, not to the business. So when you're involving CorpCom and HR and all these other departments, you don't necessarily have a common language. So that's something that's really helped, is having the maturity model be an asset that these IT teams can share with those different groups, and they don't have to create it themselves. So we've gotten a lot of positive feedback there on using that tool externally to support them.
And whatever you actually defined as as an objective that's 100% aligned with the work what the accounts team in Microsoft are also doing, which is basically maximizing the return of investment for the customer. Because quite often what happens is the customer is not necessarily even aware what is part of their E3 or E5 contract, and then there's a non-use part, which is like, well, are you aware this is part of your deal already? You should be using it, okay? What does it actually mean? How can I actually take advantage of that one in my business? Is that kind of the discussion, kind of roughly what's going through, or how do you approach this? Well, we kind of talked about that one already.
No, it's not. Let me rephrase. How do you help companies become aware? Like, one, what kind of gaps there they have, what they could be doing more because they have the tech available already, and not in a way that, well, you have this tech, so you have to use it. No. Like, you have this tech and you have this problem, you could use it for that. So how do you raise awareness?
So usually in those beginning kind of discovery stages, when we're talking about what those outcome objectives are, there's something that's going to then map to the technology. So we may know everybody's working remotely, they're having an overload of meetings and conversations, and they're taking a lot of videos. And how can we surface these videos in context? That's naturally going to lead into a conversation of, you could do this in SharePoint News, here we have Stream, maybe you want to embed these in learning pathways and have onboarding playlists. So we are always thinking about the technology aligned with that outcome objective, not just a standalone. So usually when an organization comes to us and say, we need Teams, we'll take it back a couple levels and be like, well, what are you trying to accomplish with Teams before we decide that's necessarily the right tool? Because sometimes it's Yammer. Sometimes what they're trying to accomplish isn't something you should do with an org-wide team, for example.
Right. So to what extent do you see, you know, exactly as you said, like the hype of somebody heard Teams, they need Teams, right? So, and to what extent do you experience the, let's say, pushback from you coming back, well, maybe you actually need Yammer as opposed to Teams, and they kind of feel like, hey, but it's not invented here, and we need to have Teams because executive B in department C has it, or there's a company competitor or a friend company who uses Teams, so we need to have it too. Do you see that too, or not?
All the time, especially if, I mean, to stick on the Teams Yammer debate, that's a huge one. And usually I'll start the conversation with talking about what their goal was and how each of them aligns well to the goal. Sometimes that's enough where they understand that, hey, if we're going to be having org-wide conversations about like our dogs, and that's going to be in the same activity notifications as where people are trying to get their work done, the argument that that's distracting from getting your work done is enough to say, oh, whoa, you're right. I need different communication channels for different things. Right. If that part of the conversation doesn't work, it's time for user testing. I think you have to bring people into pilot groups and say, if these are your outcome objectives and these are the tasks that we're trying to accomplish, let's measure it and let's see how these outside people can do it. And then we have data on our side to go back to that executive and say, well, 75% of people found this distracting. And then all of a sudden it's less about the technology and more about how are you increasing the productivity of your employees.
That's coming back on the Yammer and Teams, how do you, you kind of touched that already on your previous answer, but how do you differentiate Yammer and Teams in your discussions? Because at some point people are saying, why would you have Yammer? Because you have a Teams. That's kind of a classic discussion point as well.
And also, since we're on email.
Yeah. and SharePoint.
That's fair, right? And I guess usually One of my first arguments when we talk about all the different communication channels in Microsoft 365 is we already navigate this in our personal life. My grandmother nicknamed herself the virus, and so she doesn't touch computers at all. So I know if I want to talk to my grandmother, I call her on the phone, right? I'm not texting her. She's not on Instagram. I'm not sending her emails. So I have one communication channel for her. Then maybe some of my friends are on Instagram. Work is on emails. There's also some personal stuff on email as well. So remembering that if you put everything in one channel, that's overwhelming. And then you're putting the work on the end user to navigate between them, I think is a primary important part. So then once we understand, hey, we all know how to navigate this, this isn't something that's so hard for us to learn. We've all organically learned this already. Then it becomes a conversation of, well, which are each of them best at? So it's that inner loop, outer loop conversation where majority of collaboration in an internal team is happening in Microsoft Teams, right? That's where I'm getting my work done. If I'm going to look out to the rest of the organization, I want to have this outer loop conversation, maybe get some open feedback, some different types of engagement, maybe more of that social side, I'm probably going to be looking at something more like Yammer. I'm a big fan of their new additions too, with like the questions and the polls. That's not necessarily something that you can do within Teams. So it's different types of engagement as well. And embedding that on your communication sites can be really powerful. You can't embed Teams on communication sites, right? So that separates them more to collaboration versus communication.
Yeah, at least for now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You never know what's going to happen.
We'll see, right?
Exactly.
Taking notes.
Yeah. So Emily, so how did you end up doing what you're doing? So how did you end up in IT?
I have a really curly path. So I come from an art and English literature background. So I was actually a communication manager for a while. And it was one of those situations. I was on the HR team at the biotech where I worked, and we were implementing Microsoft 365, really common for HR to be one of the people that go first. And we happened to be in a meeting room, and I was presenting my screen, didn't realize I was presenting my screen. And we had a consultant talking with us and saying we couldn't do something in SharePoint. And the whole room saw me Googling how to do it and then doing it. And the chief people officer pulled me over on the side and was like, I think you're in the wrong job. Let's talk. So I started doing a lot of productivity training for our organization because we had the same situation. They turned on Microsoft 365. We didn't know how to use it. We were pretty much just using OneDrive. And we were having a lot of inefficiencies. The way we were taking meeting notes, there wasn't a lot of transparency. Everyone had content management in their inbox. So I just focused on creating these lunch and learns on how do you use OneNote for more effective meetings? How do you use things like Planner and To-Do to increase your productivity? So less about the tech, more about that outcome. And then very quickly became the product owner at that organization and helped us grow from 150 people to 1,500 in 4 years. So had a lot of experience really quickly scaling SharePoint, which was awesome.
That was so cool.
On premises SharePoint or in the cloud? So
online.
That was in cloud.
Yeah, online. Yeah. Yes, exactly. So I say I fell in love with SharePoint Classic, which now that we have SharePoint Modern, I'm like, how did that happen? But I absolutely loved it from the beginning.
I think the Classic had the flexibility of the Classic story of making a SharePoint not look like a SharePoint, and then it looked something completely different. But I don't think that's anymore. And IT and organizations are no less and less people are actually even asking that. So they're basically just saying, can I have a tool which is supporting the increasing the organization productivity rather than I want to make it look pretty, which is like, yeah, of course.
But
you
can
still make it look pretty. Yeah.
But
or then you want a Teams. But I want a Teams which is in pink. So
you just wait.
Yeah.
The one thing I wanted to ask Emily, so coming from the non-IT origin, how do you find transition to the IT world and what are the like aha moments you got along the way? Like, that's how you do it in IT.
Good question. I think that part of it is around having the conversations and aligning on projects. So one thing that I come from that communications background, so we're always starting out with those outcome objectives, which really aligns well with user experience. So that was a really natural transition. But learning more kind of the gap where some IT projects and programs don't even talk about user experience and just go right to development and aren't having conversations with the user and aren't having conversations with the audiences, that was pretty surprising in the beginning because how could we possibly build something for someone without talking to them first? So
because it's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is, but can it be cool and useful? That would be really good.
Yes. That would be good that somebody is actually using whatever we're investing our money on. So
why?
But it looks pretty. So
exactly. Right. It's pretty.
But yeah, I can. So from my perspective, I think more and more organizations are, let's say, focusing on the end user goals more efficiently. First of all, we've seen the transition where the money and the budgets are no longer in IT. The money and the budget are actually in the organization, which was already, like happened already a decade ago. Well, depending on which region people are living and watching this. And in certain organizations, still in progress. But then the second kind of transition has been really on the fact that it's the, I don't think it's a bad term to say, but it's good enough IT, which is basically, it used to be a wrong, let's say, negative term, but people, whatever actually achieves the end result is good enough. So let's go one step forward on there, and then another step forward, then another step forward, rather than making this multi-million dollar projects, which we used to do, which is fun to do. Quite often those focused more on the IT outcomes rather than the end user. And then the end users were complaining that, hey, who built this? Nobody can be a productive of this one. Nobody asked clearly from end users why, what we should be doing for. So something which we get, I have a discussion with my wife. She's working right next to that wall and on a day-to-day basis. So we're having constant discussion and she's rather the end user on her organization. So
it's not working.
Yeah, exactly. It's not working. Or yeah, and of course they use SharePoint, which is kind of funny. So but anyway.
So how many questions a day do you get? Like, hey, it doesn't work. Like, how can I fix this?
No. Not from her. So it's all good.
And you're like, oh.
Yeah, I opened a can of worms with my husband because he does operations at his organization. And, you know, I'm always like, you should get, you know, install learning pathways. You should start with your term sets ahead of time, right? And then you get down a rabbit hole of free consulting all of a sudden.
And he's like, Emily,
trust me, it's worth it.
In this case, my wife's organization is a governmental organization and they're running SharePoint on-prem, which is like...
Well, I mean, imagine. So imagine like all the knowledge you got over the years about owned files, web templates. You can apply that in practice.
Yeah.
Like the only chance.
Thank you. Let's stay away from the classic SharePoint if possible. So it's okay. Or on-premises SharePoint. No, not
it
good.
It still hurts, huh?
It's it was painful.
Can't touch this.
Yes. Anyway, so it's actually right about now that I'm thinking this was the 15 years ago I was planning to apply to Microsoft. So, because I started in Microsoft in October and it took like 5 months. I got in. So. So.
Happy application anniversary.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Exactly. That's pretty much it. Anyway, so what else do we want to talk about? Any tips from your side, Emily, related on women in IT or how we would be able to get more women and more diversity in this business? Because of course we want to have this as an equal business and hopefully 50-50, because the gender shouldn't matter on the business what we're doing. But any kind of tips from your side on how we can grow to that direction as well?
That's a tough one. I think there's two approaches I have found for myself that has been really helpful early on when I was interested. And I will say, coming from English literature background, being relatively young, it was really hard to be taken seriously early on, especially when people are asking you, you know, do you code and I don't? So kind of how am I involved in IT? What am I actually doing, right? And that was kind of laughed off really often. So finding really strong mentors who I could go to and who would support me and help elevate my voice made a really big difference. The whole Sympraxis team has been incredibly supportive of me from day one. That mattered a lot. So finding those people who are going to be there for you on those challenging days. I also write down when people say positive things and I keep a whole, you know, folder of that. So on the really bad days, don't listen to that outlier. Focus on all my good messages. Remind myself that there's more of those good than bad. And I'd say a call to action for all the allies as well, that, you know, if you're in a meeting and you hear a woman speaking up and no one's really listening to that point, being able to be an advocate for that person and helping call out or bring attention or ask, you know, hey, Emily, I haven't heard your opinion yet in this meeting. What are your thoughts? So making sure that you're helping to create that environment so people do feel comfortable speaking up and being asked to speak up and weigh in makes a really big difference. I have social anxiety. I'm incredibly shy. So I get really nervous around speaking and things like that. So having someone open that door for me makes a really big difference.
How come? Yeah. Like you, right here, like you're a pro, like you are eloquent. You like, it doesn't, it's like saying the sun is green. No, it's not.
I appreciate that. That's your experience. That means a lot to me. I will admit that I'm always shaking and nervous and sweaty. So the internal experience can often be really different.
It's Florida.
They're projecting. Florida. It's not the weather.
Now you have an excuse. It's Florida. Everybody's like that.
That's true. But I guess you don't always notice how people really feel on the inside, right? So it's
good to know. Did you just insult every single person living in Florida? Or what did you say?
No, not insult. No, it's the weather. Like, you cannot insult the weather. It's like, the weather. Sure. But Emily, like, so you're also an MVP, right? So, I mean, like, you're earned it. Like, with that, like, you have nothing to prove to anybody, right? You earned your stripes, right? So with that, like, it's like, doesn't that, like, do you see that? Kind of level the field, or is it still like you come once in a while across the same experiences you had in the past?
Oh, so this one is interesting because I've been MVP just about 2-3 months now, right? So it's still pretty new fresh. Yeah. And I haven't unfortunately been able to be out in public much yet, but I will be soon, which is really exciting. I feel in a weird way like it's almost raised the pressure a little bit because that imposter syndrome creeps in where you're like, wow, I'm on the same tier as all these incredible people who have influenced my career the whole time. So it's a fine balance of giving yourself that internal validation and not looking for the external validation. If you're not looking for that external validation, when occasionally you have those trolls because your voice has been elevated and you have more people listening now, then it hurts a little bit less because you're like, I know that I'm learning awesome stuff and providing good work to the community. It's okay this one person was cranky today, you know, and not letting it impact you as much.
Yeah.
Well, but I think, right? So... we need to have like a lamp or cues for this.
like raising a hand, you know, like in there.
Yeah.
There we go. Waldeck, you can talk.
What I wanted to ask, now I don't know. Do I?
Sorry.
Well, yeah. I know. So, like, for every person that is an MVP, there are probably 200 or maybe more who aren't. So maybe the same way you look up to others who have been MVPs for years, there are people who look up to, hey, like when I grow up, I want to be Emily.
I mean, maybe. I will say, MVP or not, I think that the community is huge and there's a lot of people that help provide value. So from my perspective, what I miss the most about in-person conferences is that it's the collective knowledge of the room. Right. And other people are going to have different experiences and perspectives that I don't have. And together we're going to make something more awesome. So I think there's it's a huge honor to be MVP, but I think that we can all contribute on different levels too.
Yeah. Totally.
And maybe one thing to note on there, I don't think the imposter syndrome is never going to go away. The question is, how do you balance that out? Because I have a massive imposter syndrome and I kind of hate meeting people because I don't know if I'm behaving properly and how do I mess up and I don't believe in myself and all of that stuff. So I'm actually surprisingly shy. I don't have any problems with going to the stage and do a presentation and talk whatever comes to my mind because, hey, it's just a talk. But then having that interactivity in the conferences or larger rooms especially, is like, it's freaking me out completely. But because you can't just get rid of that internal imposter syndrome problem. But also what's good about the imposter syndrome, if it's actually being channeled in the right way, is that then you bet on your quality, what you're delivering, as long as you don't actually get to be too stressed out of the quality being, you don't need to be a perfectionist, but still. So
well,
finding that right balance.
Parkinson's law, right? That a project will take up as much time as you allow it. So I found with my imposter syndrome, the question I'll ask myself is, do I need to learn something more about this? Is this why I feel nervous about this talk? And then I'll decide, okay, yes or no. I'll budget myself however
many.
It is always yes. But then I have to put a limit.
No, but I mean, it is exactly that. Like, there's always, like, the more you know, the more you realize you don't know.
Right? Yes.
Because you find out about this, saying, oh, crap. Like, here I thought I know it, and there's like a whole thing, but like, wow, I know nothing.
Yes. I don't want to know.
Every
I don't
time.
Want to know more. I don't want to know more.
Yeah. Like, oh my God, no.
let's actually jump on the articles, because we do have a hard stop. I will make a decision on the SPFX 112 release today. So I need to be on that meeting in 16 minutes.
Yes. The answer is yes.
Yes.
Here, there you go. I just freed you like an hour of time.
Okay, thank you. Yes, completely unnecessary meeting. Yes. So, hey, everybody, Waltek told that we should ship it. So, thank you. Done.
It's now, been decided.
Yes, it's been decided that. That's a long-running internal joke, but quite often when somebody says, no, it's been decided, nobody ever questions who decided. And you can actually play with that game for a long, long time. So, no, it's been decided that this way we have to go. Okay, fine. Anyway, so the first one was announcing Viva Learning public review happening today. So this is now in the public review available. So it can be exposed through the Microsoft Teams, and you get access on things. There's a administrative operations and all of that stuff, and sign up for the learning and to get and light up things. So please sign up for that one. We should probably do similar things with the Viva Connections development topic. Anyway, taking notes. Build and shift software better with GitHub and Microsoft Teams. So this is an updated or new article today. Related on this one. So there's a better integration with GitHub and Teams, which is really cool. So if you work in a small amount of GitHub repos and organizations, then you can probably use this to manage your work super efficiently. So at least in my case, I'm just done. My GitHub integrations, there's too many of them, so it's really hard to keep up.
You have anyway. 2 million unread messages. Message number one.
So, and this week we have the Microsoft 365 Virtual Marathon 2021, and this is a free online training event. And Emily, you had a session here as well, so just to call out that. What was the session all about?
So it's with April, David, and Hugo, and it's called Contributors Assemble. So if you're interested in getting more involved in the community, we're talking about those different opportunities, as well as things like imposter syndrome, some common barriers, and ways to overcome them. So we'd love to have you all there and have you all contribute too.
Excellent. Thanks, Emily, for that one. And you only need to register, and you will get access on all of the sessions. And what was it? It was massive amount of different tracks, but plus 300 plus sessions, which is a lot.
Wow.
60 hours in 3 days. That's quite hectic, for sure, on all of the different topics, and a lot of Microsoft speakers there as well. Last week, Mark Cashman updated us that there's an iPad support now available of Microsoft Listen iOS, so it works in iPad as well, which is really good. And there's more and more investments on the Microsoft List, which is really cool. It's actually been taking really, really well, so people seem to love it. And the JSON extensibility seems to be, well, it's the most widely viewed docs and samples in the GitHub right now as well. So people are really finding those helpful. It's probably because Chris Kent has been doing such an awesome job with the videos. Build quality Microsoft Teams. And just to come back on that, not taking anything away from the work what engineering has done. So that was a joke related on Chris Kent. So just be super clear. Build quality on Microsoft Teams. Build quality Microsoft Teams apps with these best practices. So this is part three. There was two previous parts as well, which are unfortunately not linked in here. But anyway, so good tips and kind of guidance on building solutions for the Microsoft Teams. So considerations and all of that stuff. So really, really cool stuff and things to check into when you're building those solutions for Microsoft Teams. Utilize change notification APIs for Microsoft Teams messages. That's new APIs in the Microsoft Graph. Really cool stuff as well. A lot of new stuff and new capabilities in the Graph side as well. So these are from the Trademarks of 365 BMP blog. So Teams and Adaption Idea, transfer your group chat emails to Teams with Power Automate. So basically moving those distributionless discussions to Microsoft Teams using this and driving potentially better discussion in directly in the Microsoft Teams. Still, as an example in Microsoft, a lot of our internal messaging goes through distribution lists, which just
or Yammer or Teams
or yeah, exactly. There's just multiple ways, and there's
we're
still
everywhere.
Those old distribution lists which are widely used. So, which is fine. It takes the time for organizations to adapt. Victor Villain had a Microsoft 365 BMP community spotlight. So Louis Fries is doing this once a week. There's a new person kind of called out and what is their background? What are they doing? And what are they? What is their current role and all of that stuff? So really cool. Get to know people, kind of a softer side of the community as well. What I, as a non-dev, learned to create my first Power Apps by Michael Roth. Good amount of tips related on learnings on when you are building those Power Apps. So really cool blog post as well. And these are more than welcome. I think the more and more people share about their own learnings and feelings and experiences, the better. Because it's not just about the technical facts. It's also about, okay, so how did you find the documentation and what was wrong, what was not wrong, and how can we improve, and what was missing, and all of that stuff. So, and how we can improve the product, super important as well. Learn to debug with Power Apps with Michael as well. So basically as part of those learnings, so step-by-step guidance on that. Export Power Apps and Power Automate user licenses for so getting basically insights on who's doing what and count of licenses per service. So that's really cool as well. How to beautify your Power Apps. So basically how to use icons and how to get fluent icons and how to use them in the Power Apps from Louis Rees. So really cool as well. April had a new video related on Power Apps components intro. So April has a lot of great videos, and these are getting a lot of good amount of views. So really, really cool stuff. And she's doing a really great job on splitting the videos and all of that stuff, which helps a lot on finding what's relevant. So super, super cool as well. And then there's this new tips and tricks section in the Microsoft 365 developer channel from Cloud Advocates. Actually, these are all Cloud Advocates. Yes, they are. So there's Bob German and Dan Wallin and April and Aika and Bob again. And there will be more videos in the future as well. So, Baldek, your video is done. Is it already done?
Working on it. Should not take long.
Yes. Paolo had a new video related on paging data with Microsoft Graph SDK for .NET. So basically using that and learnings on that one as well. So really cool. Risa had a new Power Apps form control and how it can be used and how it works. And he's doing really huge amount of videos every single week as well. A lot of valuable stuff for the Power Automate side and Power App side as well. And then this one, so actually it's already in the SharePoint context from Tips and Bits. So kind of a good pointer on do not go and get the data from the server side, because a lot of data is already actually on the page. But a lot of information is already there. So double check if you have access on it already. Implement Carousel in SPFX WebPart using React Slicked. So using a third-party component and then getting a React or the carousel experience in SPFX. So good hands-on lab experience for sure. This one is from Anatoly Mironov, monitoring Microsoft 365 using Raspberry Pi and Microsoft 365 CLI. So really cool story as well. Really cool stuff.
That is pretty cool, yeah.
And since Microsoft 365, CLI for Microsoft 365 can be used in any platform, you can make it running in there as well, and then basically just pinging the service health. So really, really cool
and
stuff.
And so he built a Python script that does that calls CLI to call 365 to get update about service state, and then link that to LEDs, which then lights according to the level of uptime or the up state.
Really cool. Building more than SharePoint pages with quick links and is the story. So basically, how do you take advantage of the SharePoint sign which is connected to your Teams? And there's a lot of actually opportunities there as well. And then you can surface that inside of the team. Obviously, we're looking into doing something there in the future natively within a product as well. But nothing has been yet shared. Well, not too much has been shared. But it's a good reminder that there is a SharePoint site behind of the team as well. Mark had adding conditional formatting a list form header with JSON, so good blog post on that one. So how to do modifications, and is this code or not? This classic discussion. So
yeah, yes, it is.
Yes, I think it is code. So
Emily, so here on the call, finally, we have somebody who is well educated in literature and language. Is this prose? No, it's not, right?
Not sure on that debate.
Oops. And here I thought that would be an easy one, but
I guess it depends how much you comment your code.
I am not seeing any there.
In here.
I am not seeing any verbs. Only nouns.
True. 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 Anyway, okay. So then Chris O'Brien had a blog post related to SharePoint syntax, and he's been working on this one for a few customer engagements. We talked about with him actually a few weeks back, or a few months back. I don't know. Time flies. He was a visitor in the BNP Weekly as well. Regarding had a really good discussion related on would you ever use SharePoint online without Microsoft Teams? Kind of an interesting debate as well. This used to be one of those discussion points that, hey, we want to build non-SharePoint intranet just using the Microsoft Teams, but now with Viva and all of that stuff, we're getting more and more combined, which is really, really good. So, and then one more news, which is the Power Platform samples is now out in the BMP. I think it was actually AKMS Power Platform samples. And so a great way of finding relevant samples from Microsoft and from the community. And you can filter them down based on a type and search based on the samples. And eventually all of this is going to be surfaced in the unified or universal M365 sample gallery. It's a universal thing. But for now, there are in dedicated sample galleries. But then the last one, which I wanted to quickly talk about as well, Emily, you mentioned the maturity model for Microsoft 365, and we kind of touched that discussion. You've been adding here new documents and articles, and this is a kind of an evolving guidance, right? Evolving set of processes. How is it Absolutely. Evolving? How does it work, sort of work?
So we're building out our different competencies. So we have almost all of them done. We're working on security, data, and analytics and infrastructure. After we're done with the competencies, since that's what you're using to benchmark where you are and where you want to go, we're working on a whole series of how to elevate. So we just released the how to elevate collaboration. So let's say you identify you're at the 100 level and you want to be at the 300 level because that aligns with your business objectives, then this article will go through each of the different levels, how to improve your governance and security, information architecture, and content to be able to get there. So it's the actual how-to steps of forming the different committees around it.
Cool. This is really, cool. Really cool. This is really, really cool. And super useful for thousands and thousands of customers, for sure.
Absolutely. Like, I can imagine if you own product, like, that is basically playing very much in your cards. Like, if you want to assess where you are, where you want to go, well, take this and you're almost there, right?
Absolutely.
And it's all open source and it welcomes contributions. It's constantly evolving guidance based on the people who are using it, which is, I think it's super, super cool as well. So really, really great work on this one. Now, I'm going to stop the presentation and there we go, because we're running out of time. No! What's happening this week, Emily? Anything interesting? You did some videos already, and so, which is cool.
The virtual marathon, I'd say, is the big highlight of this week. That's and true. Towards the end of the week, there's the Minnesota Administration Day as well.
Cool. Waldeck, what's on your mind?
We have planned a release for CLI for Microsoft 365. I'm not sure we'll have two releases, because depending on when SPFX 1.12.1 will ship.
Pretty soon, no, hopefully.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll probably not ship releases. other than that, we are working on quite a few. So I just learned today that we will have something to show on Build. So that would be pretty cool thing with a cool thing. I cannot say anything more, but you want to stay tuned for Build and you want to be sure that you catch the session.
Okay, cool. And I'll 112 for SPFX. I'm working on a Build session as well. I'm trying to cut down my presentation as much as possible, but Build is something which I couldn't get rid of. So it's all good. It's all good.
Well, quite a big event.
Yeah, it is. I think there's every single week there's virtual events right now. So I think people are getting slightly tired of this as well. But it's good to have guidance and videos available, and people can consume them as needed. But anyway, thank you, Emily. Thank you for joining us. Really
Thanks
great
for having
discussion.
Me.
We would have been easily going through longer time as well, but we'll get you back at some point to talk about your journey. And for those who are listening or watching, we'll be back within a week with a new EMP weekly. So that would be 125 at that point. But thanks everybody for watching or listening. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.